Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Demole Williams, touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Welcome back to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at BrownJason. Joined once again by the full crew, starting off with the man, QB1. What's going on, JR?
What's going on? Happy to be back.
And y'all are going to have to excuse the sound quality from JR for just a little bit here. He is pulling a Yinka, double shifting it, getting some Uber in while he's on the pod tonight. But as soon as he gets to another location, things should tighten up there a little bit. So keep things moving right along. Wide receiver one, striker one. What's going on, Miles?
Just out here eating dinner at 9:15 at night.
But did you at least score some goals tonight at soccer?
Of course I did.
Okay.
I didn't, but.
Did you stop someone from scoring a goal?
Yes. Okay. And I set up somebody for another one.
Yeah, we'll take that. We'll take that. And then the man, you know, draft prospect, QB2, maybe moving on up the depth chart to QB2.
Still QB3 at this point right now. I didn't have him.
Who did Prince bring? Did Prince bring baby bro to the game to take stats?
That's a good point. That Prince is out there coming with like the stats, the yardage. I mean,
write that down.
If a true draft prospect keeps their stats ingrained in their brain, they know exactly what they're doing. I knew that I threw roughly about 27 times. I knew I had probably about a 50% completion percentage, and I knew it through the touchdown and the pick. So, greatest game, but you know, we'll build on last week or this week's. So
yeah, we're gonna need to work on that completion percentage. You know, completion.
Yeah, yeah man.
PFF didn't like your game, Prince.
They didn't. They reviewed the tape. They broke it down for me. Brought me the all 22. A lot of hurried up throws. I didn't stick on brand. Y'all didn't step into the pot, climb the pocket nearly enough. But in my defense, there wasn't really much of a pocket to climb. But that being said, you know, we're gonna improve the efficiency next week.
We're going to need you to be better. So what you got for us? What kind of question are we rocking with today?
Well, I know that we broke it down, but I think it's good for the viewers to listen to. This is something that I had going on the Monday. So what did you guys, is like, you know, before you're about to perform, pregame, all that other stuff, what kind of rituals do you guys like to get inside of? For me, regardless of where I'm going to a game, where I'm going to be sweating a bunch or even performing saxophone, music-related stuff, I always have to take a shower before, you know, I get ready. You know, for me, if I smell good, I feel good, I'm going to play good, I'm going to perform good, you know, because I look good. So that's my pregame ritual. What about y'all?
All right, QB1, what about you, man?
So I didn't really have a ritual, but I had something I did, like, before every game. So I wore a rubber band in my sock. The reasoning for it is when I was, I believe it was 10, I was playing in an AAU basketball game. And they didn't allow you to wear rubber bands on your wrists. And I accidentally wore one coming out of the locker room. So the ref told me to take it off, and I didn't have anywhere to put it. So I put it in my sock, and I had the best game of my life. So ever since then, every sporting event I played in, I wore a rubber band in my sock.
Okay, so how does that work when you have, like, a really good game and you do something, but then you have a really terrible game at some point later on? Do you have to start over and do something different, J.I.?
Nah, you keep it the same,
right?
No matter what.
It's all about where it started.
Okay, Miles, right. How about you? I know that you had a pretty good one.
For football, for a game, especially games, I did do it in practice a little bit too. When I have my gloves on, I don't give high fives with the inside of my hands. I always, did the backhand when people give high fives. I don't know. It's one of those things. I always felt the ball is the only thing that should be in the inside of, that should be hitting the inside of my hands. That was one. Another one. I always had I had a Livestrong bracelet, and I wouldn't play or do anything without one. And so I had the same Livestrong bracelet, I think, for like 8 years. I finally took it off on my wedding day. I told my wife I would get rid of it, and she finally said, "Thank God, you're finally getting rid of that thing." And so I haven't worn it since.
Yeah, and I say for me, typically no rituals, just need a quiet place and some music to get myself, you know, in the zone. But there was one, you know, football season, I think it was my senior year, where we went on a bit of a run. And so like halfway through the season, we were undefeated. And one of the team captains decided that nobody was washing their under, like the undershirts that we were wearing for the rest of the season. It was awful. It was so bad.
Tell me you washed it, because I probably would
have. Oh, no, no. Like, yeah, you definitely had to take that thing home. But like half the locker room's undershirts were just completely solid once you hung them up from all the salt and everything. It was terrible. It was awful. And then, you know, of course the streak ended and folks were stanking. Yeah, it was bad. It's all bad. So, Prince, that was a pretty good one. I like that one. We're going to move pretty quickly here. I want some rapid fire reaction, because some really millennial things happened this week. And, you know, y'all are millennials, so I need to get your takes on them. So we'll start with Yanka on this one, because it was his man, Kyrie, on First Take, giving us television gold out there with Max and Stephen A. And probably the most awkward thing I've seen on TV all week. Well, until probably the next thing we're going to talk about happened. So, Yanka, what were your thoughts on kind of Kyrie's interview with Stephen A and Max? Him saying he didn't really talk to LeBron, really had nothing to say about it, didn't care if LeBron was upset. Yeah, what were your thoughts on all that? And how'd you take, you know, what Kyrie was saying about the Cavs organization and what he wanted to do career-wise and growth-wise in Boston?
See, Kyrie, he understood something really, really, really simple. He understand LeBron was the famous superstar that, you know, wherever he went, he was going to make his team better, all other stuff. Kyrie was always living in LeBron's shadow. So Kyrie did what LeBron was going to do to him had he had stayed this year. Kyrie left the relationship essentially before everything, and he essentially got like the kickstart to be able to say, yeah, I left him, you know, like, I'm good, we don't talk no more, I'm the one that left and stuff. So Kyrie's kind of being like, you know, he's trying to be getting his petty on in the relationship a little bit. But I mean, as far as the move, like LeBron, like I said, LeBron was going to do it anyways to him, so he wanted to get the jump start. So I don't have any problem with, you know, guys just like, hey, we were teammates, you know, I appreciate, you know, the championship, the ring and stuff, but I'm gonna do me. I don't have to ask permission for anybody. I know that LeBron is essentially the head coach, CEO of the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, but you know, I'm making my decision. I don't need LeBron's permission or teammates or anybody else's. I'm Kyrie. I got my own brand, and yeah, I'm gonna go build my own dynasty. So I was okay with it.
All right. JR, what were your thoughts on that? Because the first thing I thought is that the next time they face off, LeBron's gonna drop 100 on him. But then Kyrie did say some interesting things as well that I think, you know, Prince touched on right there, in terms of he did take some shots at the organization, saying that he wanted to go someplace where he was really going to be, you know, coached up and excellence was going to be demanded of him, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I guess, what were your thoughts and how did you take all that?
I thought it was just a weird interview all around, and I thought he danced around the question the whole entire time. And my whole thing was, why even go on First Take if you're going to dance around the question? The whole purpose of being on there is to, you know, air out the situation. And I love what Max Kellerman did. He didn't back down from the situation at all. And he was trying to get every single answer that he wanted out of Kyrie Irving, but he just continuously danced around the question. And they had to ask questions two or three times for him to really answer it. And I didn't really like that, because I felt like he wasn't being truthful about the situation. I mean, we know what happened between him and LeBron. He knows Bron is leaving after this year, so he beat LeBron to the punch, requesting a trade. And, you know, I have no problem with that, but, or him consulting with LeBron, as, you know, once he made the trade demand. But I thought he just danced around the question a lot. And, you know, I wish him, I hope him the best. I'm a big Kyrie Irving fan, and I just thought he danced around the question the whole time on First Take.
Okay. And really the next thing, unless, you know, Miles has a blazing hot take on the Kyrie thing, the next really millennial thing that happened was, you know, was KD coming out there with the fake accounts. And so first question for you, Miles, is how many accounts do you have and how many of them do you use to defend yourself on a daily basis? And then, you know, after that, give us your take on the whole, you know, KD fake accounts and all the other stuff that popped up this week.
Yeah, I have at least 100 separate accounts. You know, I need to get followers from somewhere, so I might as well make my own and follow myself. I thought that was pretty funny that he does that. He says it's for personal reasons, but it seems like it just was his way of using like the fake fans to to help defend him and like and do all that. So I thought it was really funny. I don't know. I think I really personally don't really care. I don't think it's I think it's funny. I think it's bizarre in a way, but I don't think it's something that I truly believe it's should really change people's overall perception of KD. I know he is really active on Twitter anyways, active on social media. He likes to, you know, respond to people and, you know, give his opinion. So I always appreciated that. So I hope this doesn't stop that. Otherwise, I'm not – I don't know. I don't know. I really don't find this to be that big of a deal, but I know it, you know, for some it is, and it's going to be in the news for a while.
I know. I'm right there with you. It's one of those things that I just think is it's funny. Like, KD's a right. different kind of dude. He's let us know already. Like, he's a sensitive guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. But he's also a guy who likes to get in there and mix it up. I just found the whole situation to be, you know, hilarious. Airing out your coach and your former team and the organization and then not realizing you're on, you know, the wrong account. I just, yeah, that's kind of my fear sometimes when I'm out there managing, you know, the Climbing the Pocket account, that I'm going to go and post a bunch of, you know, political stuff or something from the wrong account and get myself in trouble with y'all. But, yeah, the whole situation is funny to me. I don't really think it's a big deal. If anything, even though the story right now is the social media stuff, I would really like the media to get into, you know, why didn't you want to play for Billy Donovan? What was it about the organization you didn't like more so than kind of the, oh, why is he on there with multiple accounts type thing? But I guess, JR, what are your thoughts on the whole KD, multiple accounts, defending yourself on Twitter type thing?
Yeah, I'm with y'all, and I agree with all points made. KD is a very sensitive person, and I think he kind of created those accounts to get back at all the people that called him a snake and, you know, different types of names after he signed with the Warriors. And I think that was the whole purpose of creating the other account, just to, you know, send low-key jabs to other fans and retaliate to the names that they called him since he left the Thunder. So I don't see it as a big issue, in my opinion.
Yo, and Yanka, bring us home on the KD thing. What are your thoughts on KD going out there defending himself on Instagram and Twitter? And how many accounts you got, man?
I have an account for every Vikings member that I feel like I need to defend. So I'll probably have for about, you know, 63. But, you know, one gets deactivated every so often when they bring up a guy to the active roster. Anyways, I don't know. As far as the KD thing, I didn't really like, I heard about it on Twitter, but I didn't really like research it very much. So I don't have really a profound take. Superstars are still people, athletes, entertainers are still people. When people at them on Twitter, like, people are always surprised when, you know, an athlete like will respond to like some of the most, like, I don't know, whether it be just outlandish things that people will say to people thinking, oh, well, this person is never going to respond to me because they have, you know, 100,000+ followers and stuff. But no, like, sometimes these people, they see those tweets, but a lot of times they'll just ignore them because, again, they try to be above that. But, you know, KD was just like, you know what, I'm going to try to interact with some of these people, but, you know, maybe on a, you know, more commoner level and not just be this KD, this, you know, the superstar that I am. I'm just going to try to be like one of them. But, you know, I didn't, maybe not the most mature way to handle it, but at the same time, you know, I think there's other avenues he can do if he really wants to reach out to fans and just, you know, just be a regular dude every so often. So, you know, I didn't have any feelings for or against it. So
cool. Well, let's get this thing moving right along. Got a little bit of Vikings talk to go through. I think by this time, all of us have had an opportunity to watch all of the clips that have been put out there about Sam Bradford and his knee. He and Case Keenum talked to the press. We know that it's a non-contact injury, happened in the Saints game, tweaked it a little bit, started to swell up, affecting his mobility. JR, you are our resident quarterback, and I know that you've been on Twitter kind of talking about how you felt about what you saw in terms of, you know, him not stepping into throws and kind of limping around a little bit. I guess give us your take and really help us, you know, understand what your thoughts are on Sam Bradford and his availability for this weekend's game against the Bucs.
Yeah, so there was a lot of different videos going around. I mean, all of them were of the same reps that Bradford was taking. It looks like he was just throwing what's called routes on air. So he was just throwing basically pat and go with receivers. They'll go through like a scripted set of routes, running backs and receivers, and that's what he was going through. It didn't look like a, you know, a live open session of practice. But what you saw with him was he was very ginger on that lead leg. And what your lead leg is, it's your balance leg as far as, you know, before you actually throw. And it's where you generate your power and your torque. And that's where you get your velocity on your throws as well. And what you saw was he wasn't fully stepping. And the example I like to use is with pitchers. You see that lead leg and they're putting a lot of force because it enables them to have accurate throws or drive the ball. And you didn't see that with Bradford. He wasn't taking that long extended drive like some pitchers do to get that torque and that drive behind the ball. And it's clearly, it's clear as day to me that he was favoring that knee. He was limping around a little bit. It wasn't as bad as the videos you saw pregame with the Steelers, against the Steelers. But he still was very ginger on that knee. And me personally, I don't think there's any way he plays this week just because he looked really bad on that knee. And that's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor, but that's just my opinion. The knee looked really bad.
All right, Miles, what about you, Aaron? What are your thoughts on that? What do you think? Is he going to play this week? And then not necessarily, I guess the diagnosis type stuff, but I guess another thing that kind of popped up was, what are your thoughts on how the Vikings have handled this? Rumor came out that Case Keenum wasn't made aware that he was actually going to be the starter until a couple hours before the game last week. Like, I guess, what are your thoughts on not just the injury and if he's going to play, but kind of how the Vikings have been playing this whole thing thus far?
Yeah, in terms of the injury, I just think it's one of those. It seems like it's one of those similar to, I'm not going to compare it to Teddy, but in the way it's in that sense of like a freak accident, like didn't really know when it happened. He didn't know when it happened. Obviously, that's not how Teddy's went down, but like it happened randomly, and he's saying it's non-contact, and they're saying it's a bone bruise to his knee, and a lot of people are questioning that aspect of it, which, I mean, if people are believing the way Teddy's injury happened was non-contact, then I can believe that Sam Bradford got a bone bruise from a non-contact. So I don't want to get into all that, but like JR said, he hit the nail on the head. He didn't look all that great. He wasn't moving around all that great. I do think he was stepping into the throws a little bit more today than he was in the videos we saw on Sunday. Now, does that mean he's ready to go? No. We won't know anything, I think, and I don't think they'll know anything until the day before, the day of the game, which is unfortunate. It really hurts guys like Case Keenum, really hurts the preparation for the overall offense and the team. Their mentality and their going into the game should be, you know, they should have some idea of who's starting, and I think that's kind of tough. I really would they did unfortunately put Case into a really tough situation on Sunday because they didn't know that Sam wasn't going to be ready to go on Sunday. They were like, we kept hearing he's going to test it out, you know, a couple hours before the game. They're going to see how he holds up. And if he holds up, then they're going to play him. So it's really tough and unfortunate for Case because, you know, finding out just a couple hours before the game that, it, you know, it's his offense for the, you know, it's his game this, you know, this week. And the biggest thing with that is it just, I know he probably went into that, you know, into the week once he found out Sam was banged up and hurt that, you know, he kind of started preparing himself mentally for being the starter. But overall, I don't think they had planned and really game planned around what Case's strengths are compared to Sam's and the weakness as well, which are, you know, they are different. And so I think, you know, we kind of saw that in the second toward the second quarter and the second half of the game a little bit more where they let Case open things up a little bit more and they let him get a little more comfortable. So I think this week is a big one because if Sam's really only limited, you really need to start planning and making it seem like Case is going to be the starter because he needs to have that preparation. He needs the reps and to build the chemistry with guys like Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, Kyle Rudolph, Laquon Treadwell, Jairus Wright. So he needs to continue to build all that and go into this week pretending like he's a starter. And if for some reason, you know, continue to get Sam reps as he goes if he's good enough to do it. But I wouldn't, you know, I'm still in the favor of not rushing Sam back just because I don't think it's smart in the long run to jeopardize his long-term health for the season. So I don't know. I don't think they're handling it poorly, but I also know that they might be pushing Sam a little bit harder than they need to get back because they don't have a backup plan and, you know, they want to win. It's a tough first few weeks to start the season, especially too. So you don't want to go in the hole down 1-2. So it'll be a tough situation for sure.
All right, Saxy. And as the man who apparently saw the future of all of this in, was it March? I think it was March that you saw the future of how June. All of this should go. So let us know what your thoughts are on this whole Sam Bradford situation and how it's been handled and what your expectations are for this week and the next couple.
Well, apparently I not March, but June 6th. Go back and listen to the pod. It was our Eric interview, Pro Football Focus.
You've listened to the pod before?
Yeah, a few times. Minute 35 seconds. You ask a question, I answer it very, very seriously. I did very much feel that. But I'll let you all go listen to the tape and stuff. But anyways, as far as this situation goes, I don't feel like the Vikings are handling it, like Miles was saying, poorly. But I do think that they need to be real with themselves. Super Bowl's coming here, so obviously there's more pressure for Rick Spielman and Zim to perform, make sure this team is at least a playoff team and goes a little bit farther than that. So that's going to make them make some decisions that are, you know, might have to sacrifice a guy or two. You're either going to sacrifice Sam or you're probably going to end up sacrificing Teddy. They won't not let Sam play during that division run. So if Sam Bradford comes back for the Detroit game, you know, so be it. But he's one of the two, like, definitely Sam is definitely going to be playing for the Packer game. So as far as the injury goes, this is something that I was somewhat worried about in the offseason. I thought to myself, like, hey, what happens with Sam? You know, he's going to be 30 soon. You know, he has had two ACL injuries. What happens if, you know, maybe something aggravates that or whatnot? I'd never, ever wish injuries on players whatsoever. So, I mean, I'm actually sad for Sam Bradford because I know he has worked hard to get back to where he's at. That being said, this doesn't bode well for him, both for this season and future as far as extension talks with the Vikings. You don't know when this is gonna pop up again. And I think the Vikings have to consider from that standpoint, you know, can this be the guy moving forward? And they have to say that same exact thing for Teddy Bridgewater, who currently right now has somewhat of a bionic leg, considering all the stuff that he probably has in his left knee right now. But I would say sit Sam Bradford this week, potentially sit him next week and get him ready for is that Green Bay that they face before the bye? No, get him ready for Chicago. Getting ready for that game. That for sure, he needs to at least get a game back before he faces Green Bay. But
we'll awesome. See. Awesome. And we got those Sam takes out of the way just in time because we have the man, my new best friend on Twitter, Riley, has joined us here to give us some insight, help us preview this upcoming matchup between the Vikings and the Bucks. What's going on, Riley?
Doing good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, I'm doing all right. I got the whole crew here, JR, Miles, and Yanka also with me. And, yeah, excited to get into this. So that's the first thing I wanted to know is, I guess, tell us a little bit about yourself, where we can find your work, and how you really became a Bucks fan.
You can find my work. I do the NFL. I write about the NFL draft for Breaking Football, breakingfootball.com there. And then I write about the Bucks for SB Nation's Bucks site, Bucks Nation. I try to do some film breakdowns over at Bucks Nation there. And then I do more scouting reports and things of that nature over at Breaking Football.
I guess the big thing here, I guess, you know, going into this matchup, from your perspective, what are the keys to the game? What are the things that we as Viking fans, we're not really that familiar with, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We obviously know, you know, Jameis, Gerald, you know, Mike Evans and D-Jax. But outside of that, I guess, what are the keys? Who are the players we really should be paying attention to as we get into this game?
You know, from a Bucks perspective, I think obviously there are some bigger players that are league-wide names that are known pretty well. But I think being able for you mentioned it earlier on Twitter, but Ben Gadeon being able to stop the tight end play for the Bucs between Cam Britt and O.J. Howard will be a big matchup, I think, and a big test for him. I think that's probably one of the bigger matchups of the game. And I think the Vikings' defensive line against the Bucs' offensive line, which, according to PFF, didn't have a great performance in week one. They said Demar Dotson had a really great game, but the rest of the offensive line was subpar. And I think with the defensive line with the likes of Everson Griffin, Linval Joseph, and Danielle Hunter, it'll be important for them to set the tone in the running game.
That's awesome here. And I guess, JR, I saw that you pulled yourself off mute there. Did you have a question you wanted to jump in with?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of Jameis Winston, and, you know, I think you guys have a franchise quarterback. Just what's your thoughts on how he's played to this point?
You know, I think Jameis has always kind of had concerns in terms of turning the ball over. I think coming out, you know, as a redshirt sophomore year at FSU, threw a lot of interceptions, had a lot of fumbles, and I think a lot of analysts had issues with that. And I think that's kind of grown into what is a part of Jameis's game. You know, I think he's kind of got a risk-taker mentality in terms of that regard. He's got a risk-taker mentality in that kind of sense, I suppose. Yeah. But I think that's not really going to change with Jameis. I don't think trying to put Jameis into a box is going to limit his game more than it is going to help him. And then another thing that we've been looking for Jameis to get better at since he got into Tampa Bay is throwing the ball deep. Even after his rookie year, we were saying about how he was amongst the worst in the league at throwing the deep ball, and he hasn't really shown much improvement. So those are the two weak areas for Jameis. But I think overall, I think you've seen his leadership. You see the Bucs like to tweet out his huddle kind of speeches before the game, and you can see that he's a leader. You know, he's 23 years old and is already the biggest leader on this team, the face of this franchise, and, you know, handles it with a lot of humbleness, I guess, and a respect for the position that he's in.
Hey, Riley, how you doing? I had a question for you.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good. So I've gotten into some arguments with some buddies about this, and just randomly talking about, you know, how the Miami Dolphins and the Bucks have, you know, been put into a difficult situation with having to take their bye week in week one. And now they literally have to play 16 straight weeks. How do you kind of see that playing a role in affecting the team overall? Because for me personally, I just think it's going to be a really tough stretch for the Bucks and Dolphins. But we can obviously just keep it to the Bucks. And just how you feel that, you know, in the long run, you know, heading down through that, you know, that long playoff stretch and everything like that, how that's gonna play out for you guys.
You know, I think playing 16 straight games is definitely a strain on the players. I think it's nice to have that bye week in the middle of the year. Week 11 is kind of on the later side in terms of a bye week. But being able to have that week off, kind of go back home, be with your family, I think is important for the players to have that kind of rest. And to have it at the beginning of the year is kind of useless, considering that they hadn't played in the fourth preseason game, most of the players who are playing the majority of snaps. So I think in that regard, it's kind of annoying, I guess. But I think it was definitely a public safety issue, and they weren't going to be able – I was on board with relocating it to somewhere like Philadelphia and playing it that weekend, but I can understand where players were going to want to be with their families and that kind of thing, where it would have been hard to figure that out in, like, the three-day span that they had to figure it out.
Definitely, yeah, that makes sense.
So Riley, one of the big matchups in this game, and the matchup I think that most Vikings fans are really, really looking forward to, just based on how he's done over the first couple weeks of the season – is Xavier Rhodes versus Mike Evans. So I know from our perspective, we expect Xavier Rhodes to go in there and kind of lock things down. From the perspective of Tampa Bay and their fans, I guess, what are your thoughts on how that matchup's going to go based on what you've seen from Xavier Rhodes and Mike Evans thus far?
You know, I think that's definitely two players who are top five at their position in the league in terms of Rhodes and Evans. But I think you saw last week that Xavier Rhodes did a fairly good job of shutting down Antonio Brown against the Steelers. And I think Rhodes is, you know, 6'1", 220 pounds, and he was able to stay with a shiftier route-running style receiver in Brown. And he'll have a completely different matchup this week with a 6'6 receiver like Evans, who's more of a box-out and 50-50 ball option than he is a route runner. But I think for Rhodes, I think it's a big test just with these first 3 weeks going up against, you know, Michael Thomas, Antonio Brown and Mike Evans, which are probably all top 10 receivers in the league. But I think with that new contract, he's proving that he's still at the top of his position.
Thank you. And then from you kind of hinted at it already, and I know there's something that all of us have been worrying about a little bit there is, you know, we expect Gerald McCoy is going to be a problem for us. You know, he's a beast, and our interior line still has some questions. But who are the other players on the Bucs defense that we really should be concerned about?
You know, I think Noah Spence had the only sack of the game. He had the forced fumble on Mike Glennon in their first game of the season. I think Spence hasn't really developed a power move yet. He's still raw in that regard, but his ability to turn the corner, bend around the edge with speed is really just hard to stop, and especially if he wins with timing the snap and explosiveness and twitch, it's hard for offenses to stop at times. So I think that will probably be a matchup to look at on the offensive line, but I think that the Vikings offensive line obviously has had some weaknesses. Pat Elflein is a really good rookie, but the other pieces along that area aren't up to league average, I guess you'd say. But I think Gerald McCoy and Chris Baker both held out of practice today. There's a flu in the locker room right now, so that's why Chris Baker was out. And then Gerald McCoy usually will have like a day or two off a week, where and he had an ankle injury, but I expected both to be playing on Sunday. So I think that will definitely be – if they can even just limit the two of them, it'll be important for them to do so.
Thanks, man. And I guess, Yinka, let me let you hop in here. I guess, do you have any questions for Riley?
Yeah, Riley, how you doing? This is Yinka. What other matchups, specifically maybe, you know, Deshaun Jackson, excuse me, how he's going to be utilized, and, you know, how would you feel like the matchup between him and Trey Waynes would pan out?
You know, I think Deshaun is obviously one of the best deep receivers in the league, deep speed. He's still got it, even if he's getting past 30 now. But I think, you know, Deshaun, the Bucs had him run a lot of go routes, I guess, in week one. And although he Kyle Fuller locked him down pretty good in that regard in week one, I think with a player like Rhodes, who they usually play in a lot of press man type of situations, Deshaun just winning off the line of scrimmage is going to be big. And he can do that because with his speed. So I think that it'll be a relatively easy matchup for them, for Jackson. And I think, whereas if Evans may fade playing one of the best corners in the game right now, I think Deshaun is playing one of the lesser corners, that starting corners in the game right now, and it'll be an easier matchup for him than it was in week one.
Awesome. So, Riley, what upcoming projects do you have, and what should we be on the lookout for?
Looking on doing an all-22 breakdown each week for the Bucs, just kind of looking at how they did in offense and defense, trying to see how certain plays went down, certain breakdowns maybe went down. I'm trying to do that for my Bucs coverage, and then just kind of tracking the stock up and stock down for college football. I like to focus on the quarterback position, so looking at kind of guys who've risen up boards since the start of the year and guys who have fallen down boards, I try to do a little bit of that each week. And I usually do a piece of, like, scouting notes for one of the games over the weekend, where I take notes of the key prospects and how they did in that game. So I usually will do that's a lot of just recursive weekly stuff that I'll end up doing, and then I'll have other projects along the way as we get closer to the draft as well.
All right, so Riley, quarterbacks, we're Vikings fans here, and we're short on quarterbacks with healthy knees. So let's say we did need to go into the draft and look for a quarterback. Who are the names that we really should be focused on?
You know, I think Mason Rudolph is a guy who doesn't really profile as a round one guy, in my opinion, but is a good day two quarterback. There have been reports that scouts have said that he's a day three project, but I think that Rudolph, I think he's got good accuracy at all three levels of the field. Oklahoma State has him do a lot of just throwing it up on go routes, and there have been questions about his ability to read the whole field overall. But I think as a day two guy who you take round two, round three, I think Rudolph is a guy you can sit year one and have continue to develop. And I think Baker Mayfield, coming off that big win at Ohio State a few weeks ago, the Oklahoma quarterback, probably top most people's Heisman lists right now. But Mayfield, you know, he's got a really strong arm. He does a really good job playing out of structure and out of the pocket. And I think that's something that the Vikings have kind of missed with Sam Bradford, the guy who kind of likes to stay in the pocket and doesn't move around or climb the pocket that well. So I think that having a guy who can do that and extend plays, that'll be big to get guys like Thielen and Diggs open overall in the future. And I think that's something that they can look to address in the draft.
All right, so final questions for you here. Need a bold prediction for the game from you and your final score prediction.
I'll say for a bold prediction, I'll say that Deshaun Jackson has over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. I think going up against Trey Waynes or another backup corner will be a big matchup, will be an easy matchup for him, and it's something that he's been getting ready for in the last week or so. obviously. And then in terms of a score prediction, I'd probably say like 24-17 Bucks right now. I think the key for the Bucks will be limiting Dalvin Cook in the running game, with Sam Bradford unlikely to play. Case Keenum is 2-0 against the team in the last 2 years, with and he's surprisingly thrown 3 touchdowns of 40 or more yards, and the Bucks have only allowed 3 other touchdowns of 40 or more yards in the same span. So I think being able to limit the deep passing game and Dalvin Cook are the keys to the game for the Bucks and to get a victory.
Well, that's all I got for you this evening. I want to say thank you for coming on with us tonight. I guess JR, Miles, Yinka, anything for Riley before we get him on out of here?
I'm good. No, we appreciate you coming on, Riley.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Having me on, I appreciate it.
Hey, keep up the great work, man.
All right. So that was great. Riley really does know his stuff. So now we got Riley's prediction. We're going to go around here and get your thoughts on the game, because Riley seems pretty confident that the Bucks are going to come in into our house and handle business, and that D-Jax on the fast track is gonna be a problem for us. So, JR, based on what you've been looking at, based on what you've seen, what are the keys to this game for you, and what are your thoughts on how things go with the Vikings and the Bucks?
Yeah, so I don't think Sam Bradford will play, just based on the videos I've seen at this point. Yes, it is still early on in the week, but he just doesn't look like he's going to be healthy enough to play at this point. Hopefully he does progress, and maybe he does play this week. I don't know. But I'm going to assume that he doesn't. So my score prediction, I think it's going to be 27-13 Bucks. I just don't see how the offense is going to be able to generate enough points and sustain drives in order to keep this explosive offense contained. If the Vikings do want to win, the key to the game is establishing Dalvin Cook. I think it needs to be the Dalvin Cook show. They have to give him the ball, I think, at least 20 times successfully in order to win this game. They have to find a way to grind out the clock and keep Jameis Winston on the sideline. And the defense has to keep them off the field as well. And they have to have third down efficiency on both sides of the ball. So Keenum has to make some key throws on third down situations. And the defense has to get off the field on third down in order to win this game.
And it's interesting because, you know, that's what many have been saying, is that Dalvin needs to really be the key to this game. But then when you look at things and you look at the matchups and you look at where we have a big advantage, like the Bucks front seven versus our O-line, I mean, you could say that they have the advantage there. But then when you look at our skill position players versus their cover guys, I mean, we really should be able to do work in the passing game. So even with that kind of taken into consideration, where we do have, you know, Elfline and Easton going up against, you know, McCoy and Baker, you still think running the ball is the way to go, or do you think maybe Case can get it done given the weaknesses of the Bucs secondary?
No, I don't think they need to pass the ball a lot this game, just because I don't think Case is capable enough to be able to sustain drives like that. And if the Vikings keep going three and out throughout the game, I think it's going to get really ugly.
And Miles, what about you? I guess, what have you seen? What are your thoughts on how this all goes? And if it were you, I guess, what kind of game plan are you putting out there to bring back a win for the Vikings?
Yeah, I think obviously the biggest key is going to be the Bradford decision, whether he goes this week. And I think they should continue to kind of plan as if Case is going to be the guy and plan around him. And I think that's only going to help him. So I think definitely having the home field advantage is always going to be good, especially for a guy like Case Keenum, having the fans, you know, cheering him on, having his back and getting really loud for him, or, you know, in the sense of, you know, being on that side, not getting too loud. You don't want to drown out the cadence, but in the fact of, you know, having that advantage at home, and, you know, how well we do play at home at US Bank Stadium is always key. I think that does kind of flip the tide a little bit. If they can establish the run, like JR had said, early and kind of get some success there, that should help set things up for Case Keenum, and the fact that, you know, like you'd mentioned, Jason, guys like Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, they're going to have, you know, plus matchups against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive back. So I think that's a key and important cog. And we know that they're going to try to shut down those guys, you know, whether they're doubling Diggs or, you know, bringing the safety over to help over, you know, help Adam Thielen. So that should help open up things for guys like Kyle Rudolph and Laquan Treadwell this week. So that's really important. If Case can get into a rhythm and establish some, you know, some decent drives early in the game, that's really going to help set things up, you know, whether it's a field goal or, you know, even, you know, just getting points, getting on the board is going to be really important for this team. You know, even if it's just a field goal, you know, cause you want to, you know, continue to build and gain that confidence early in the game. Defensively, I think the biggest key is shutting down DeSean Jackson, because I do think that they will plan on shadowing Mike Evans with Xavier Rhodes, which I think is the smart move. It's, you know, he's in that light now. He's becoming in that, you know, same talented group as guys like Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, AJ Green. He's up there in that upper echelon. And so I think it'd be important to kind of take him away and force Jameis to go to his second and third reads, which makes DeSean Jackson that much more dangerous. So, you know, just making sure we don't get beat deep. Let DeSean beat you underneath. Let him don't let him beat you deep, because if he beats you deep, then it's over. And he's beaten us a few times, I know, when he's with Washington, specifically Washington, the last couple of times we played him there. I think that's he's a guy that's done a pretty good job matching up against our defensive backs. So.
And Saxy Prince, bring us home, man. What are your thoughts? What are your keys to this matchup and how it goes?
I can't believe none of y'all mentioned revenge game from previous shutdown cornerback Josh Robinson. I think
he's still in the league.
He's the captain.
He's a captain, man. Come on now. He's a captain of the Bucks. Wow. Actually, one of my bold predictions is I think Josh Robinson is going to get one of his INTs. It's going to be a revenge interception. Wow. Another bold prediction is there's going to be either a defense or special team score from the Vikings. I do think this game is going to be really close. So I'm looking at it probably around 22-21, and I think it's going to go either the Vikings or the Bucks. I have
no.
Okay,
no,
we don't, 20-21 Vikings. Fine, I'll say it. All right, you happy?
Okay, all right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to give a score prediction. My bad.
No. You didn't forget. Yinka just jumped ahead, as he's known to do every now and again. It's all right.
No, you clearly have said.
I'll come back through for you so you guys can give us your bold predictions.
Gotcha.
And all that stuff.
We were in the bold prediction scores.
I'm shocked Miles didn't mention Chris Godwin.
I know. I wanted to. I wanted to. He didn't factor much last week, but he could be one of those guys that does – beat us, but I think a guy like OJ Howard or Cameron Brate are all guys I worry about more this week than Godwin, which I hate.
Weapons everywhere.
All right, so let's do it. Bold prediction, score prediction, Yinka.
If you had listened to JR's thing, he had given both a bold and a score prediction. So, yeah, I'm going to stick with mine, 2021 Vikings.
All right, JR, run us through it.
27-13 Bucks.
And what's bold?
Dalvin Cook, 150 yards. Is that bold enough?
I don't know if that's really that bold. I mean, based on how we started the season.
I don't know. I got to think of bold. Come back to me.
All right, we'll come back to you. Miles, what you got? Bold prediction, score prediction.
Bold prediction. I'm going to keep going until it happens. Laquon Treadwell touchdown. and I think Trey Wayne's interception.
Oh boy.
I wouldn't mind seeing a redemption story from him.
Okay.
and then score wise, if that happens, if like, you know, Laquon Treadwell scoring touchdowns, Trey Wayne's is getting interceptions, I'd expect this team to be winning or at least having, you know, in the opportunity to win the game. I'm gonna say 24-20 Vikings, because I can't go against them like JR does.
I'm a realist. Y'all
that's
got
not what this is about.
Y'all got a lot of faith in Case Keenum.
All right, so
that's not the point.
I'm going bold prediction, score prediction. My bold prediction, Yinka kind of touched on it, but I think this is going to be one of them games like when we were 5-0 to start last season. I think we're going to get a couple scores from defense and special teams. One thing we know about Jameis is that he is known to give the ball away from time to time. And if you look at the matchups we have in there across the defensive line, we should be able to get some pressure on him, maybe drop a linebacker in under a route and take one back to the house. So I think we'll get one there, and then maybe a Marcus Sherrill's taking one to the house as well, just to give a shout-out to Prince. And then my score prediction, I think that, you know, if the defense plays the way that they can, because we I think defensively we have some advantages, especially in the trenches. I think this is one that potentially can get away from us, but we don't need Case Keenum to do very much. And I'm going to say the Vikings win this one 31-17.
31?
Ooh. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're getting spotted two scores. Ooh. And we might have another turnover in there. We might have another turnover in there somewhere.
This isn't really bold, but I'll say Harrison Smith finally breaks his interception streak. I think it's up to 20-something games.
Yeah, Jameis will give him one, man.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he didn't have nine interception all last year. So and that was like his first year of his career not having an interception in the season.
Yeah. I mean, really, if you can force Jameis to have to be patient, I mean, he'll give you one at some point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So I think this is one of the games where it's, even though it doesn't look like that, I think this might be a get right game for the defense, especially given how sloppy they played against Pittsburgh. I'm looking for a big bounce back performance and a couple turnovers and at least one defensive touchdown, and then Marcus Sherrills or Jet, but probably Marcus Sherrills doing this thing. So before we get up out of here, I guess run through everybody here. JR, start us off. What do you have upcoming? Anything we should be looking out for?
No, not this week. I'm still churning out the database for 2018 prospects at this point.
All right, Miles, anything we should be looking out for you? I mean, you're on that JR no sleep pattern now on Twitter at 4 a.m. Any inspiration going to hit you? Maybe knock out a quick article?
I know, man. I'm trying to. It's been tough with the puppy teething. I know it's not – I don't – having a puppy is not like having a kid because I know they're separate, but, I mean
– It's your starter kid. Tough. It's your
starter kid. Yeah, it's just tough going through this phase. So I'm working on stuff. I'm definitely – I have been looking at 6-0, and I'm gonna put something together with some of my probably heading into, you know, whether it's this week or next week, the probably my top five at certain positions.
Awesome. Hey Miles, could you ask Prince for me if he went to training camp?
How you still gonna give me a slack when I'm the only person who's wrote anything for our site this week on the pod?
Because that's kind of what we do around here. I mean, you tease the greatest article of all time.
It's still coming. It's a narrative, so it takes a little bit longer. Like, you have to, like, do all these connection stuff, have, a climax, you know, rise in action, all that stuff.
Inspiration's really got to hit you for you to get this one. I feel you, man. I feel you. Anything else we should be looking out for?
Not right now. I mean, I'm still doing... I'll still do like film breakdowns and whatnot, just what I'm seeing, and maybe some previews and whatnot. But I did have an article, I think maybe came out yesterday about, what was that article about? I don't know. It was about something. Look at the Climb the Pocket website. It was on there somewhere.
Are you talking about the article about Sam? Sam and Case?
Yeah, that's what it was. The Curious Case of Sam Bradford. Just what I think the Vikings should do, or, you know, decisions that they'll have to make upcoming. So, yeah.
All right. We'll be sure to tweet that back out for the folks. And then in terms of myself, nothing written, but yesterday, Eric, Luke, and myself dropped the Pocket Protectors podcast, looking at football through a bit of an analytical lens. So if you haven't given that a listen, you know, check it out. We have Eric in there giving some context around some of the stuff with PFF and grades and things like that, especially this early in the season. So, yeah, give that a listen. And, yeah, that's pretty much it. We'll be doing this with these guys a couple times a week, and then once a week going on with Luke and Erica to look at football from a little bit of a different perspective. So that's all it is for me. It's getting late. We know Miles is tired. And, yeah, we're going to get up out of here. So my name is Jason Brown. I want to thank you for listening to another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. And we will talk to you soon. Go Vikes.